This is the Mahogany Books Podcast Network.
What's good, Front Row family? This is Derek Young, co-owner and founder of Mahogany Books. I'm excited to bring you this special episode of Mahogany Books Front Row, featuring Jason Reynolds and Niall Bullock discussing the audiobook soundtrack at our 2025 Black Books Matter Fest in Oxon Hill, Maryland. If you have ever been to any of our events, you know the Mahogany Books experience is unlike any book event you've ever attended. We believe in joyful gatherings that celebrate our culture, build community, and enable honest conversations. When you listen to this episode, we hope you'll feel the energy that permeated that entire day. 5,000 plus book readers joined us for a celebration of Black literary culture that stands firm against erasure while proudly claiming agency over our stories and heritage. Enjoy.
So I have the honor of welcoming out these two incredible artists. One of these gentlemen has been part of the Mahogany Books family for a very, very, very long time. And we're super excited to have him here. So help me welcome, loud round of applause for Jason Reynolds and Niall Bullock. Okay, so we're gonna, all right, so fantastic. Everybody, this is going to be an exciting conversation. I have not finished reading a book myself, right? I've been working on it the last few days, and I gotta say, there are a couple of things here that first stood out to me, right? And I'm actually kind of skipping over the bio, but we're going to kind of get into some of that during the conversation. The first thing I want to say to Jason, because number one, Jason has been like family to us for a very long time. And every time I read one of his books, there's always a moment in it, and I'm like, dude, you are really ridiculous. Like, the jokes, sure. The way that he tells a story, the way that even at 48 years old, I'm reading a young reader, a young adult book, I still feel connected, I still feel seen in it, I get the jokes. Like, it's something that I just always appreciate from you when you write. And I just wanted to make sure I had a chance to say that to you face to face in front.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so real quick, give everybody brief breakdown. Who are you? Everyone should know, but.
What's up? It's a whole lot of y'all in here. What's going on? Good to see everybody. My name is Jason Reynolds, and I'm an author of a whole bunch of books. I'm from Oxon Hill, by the way, so it's always good to be around here. This is something new. This particular project is a new project, something different, because it's all audio. And I'm just happy to be here, and I'm proud of you, bro.
Thank you.
You and Ramunda, I'm proud of y'all. So let me say that, like, it's important that we love on our folks publicly. Y'all built this. Right? We're gonna show up for you if you give us a framework, right?
Yes.
Let us know, and we're gonna be there. So I'm just proud of y'all.
Yeah, awesome. So, and I was saying this, my next question will be for now, just real quick, because I want you to kind of introduce yourself super quick. There was two things I noticed as I'm listening to the book. Number one, I'm having great appreciation for the story that's being told. And then I had a moment to stop to think about the energy that was coming from this book. And what you brought to the story, I had to take a moment and just settle in it, because it really felt like you connected with the book. So what I want to do real quick is introduce yourself and then talk a little bit about your feeling on just your initial read of the book. What did you get from it?
What's going on, everybody? My name is Niall Bullock. I'm from Teaneck, New Jersey, and I'm super happy to be here. There's a lot of beautiful people in this room. When it comes to this project, and I've told Jason this a couple times now, without a doubt, this is the most special project that I've worked on in my short career in audiobooks. I'm still very new to it, but and to also be a part of an all-black cast, a fully black cast, it's not something that happens a lot in the audiobook world, and also being able to be in the studio space with everybody simultaneously. You know, there's a lot of stuff being done from home, people in different parts of the globe, and we were really able to make this like a full family production, and we got it done the same day, met each other, got through the whole book same day. Like, we knocked it out like that. And that was, I feel like, again, the cast and just the rhythm of how this was written, like Jason's work with this book, everything is so precise. There's so much detail that goes into the music, the sound effects, the theme, the setting. There's a real rhythm to this book, as musical as it is. And I feel like me being a musician myself, I come from a family of artists. My mom is a singer and songwriter. My dad is a jazz bass player. My brother is an actor as well. I'm also a dancer myself. I'm a recording artist. So Sty just made sense to me. I was like, yeah, it is me, bro. I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be working on this. And, you know, I don't feel like I can say anything else other than the fact that it just made so much sense, you know? Like, I'm in the city all the time. I was born in New York City. I only lived there for a very short period of time, for like only 2-3 months in Harlem. And then I moved to the suburbs. I'm a Jersey kid. For anybody from Jersey up in here? Come on, Jersey, let's go. Yeah. Just being able to also do that digging and kind of understand what it's like to... I'm not gonna say that it wasn't a challenge at parts, being able to bring, you know, that aspect of what it's like being in the city and not being exposed to as many things as, like, you know, getting off the subway. Like, I remember getting off the subway and seeing certain acts, but like Jason was talking about certain things, like growing up in New York, where there was like literal pillars, like street performers who you would see like every week, every day at the same spot, popping out and just doing what they love. So there was definitely stepping stones that I had to kind of like develop kind of fast, but it just was such a great cast and such a great experience that it all just came together like a band.
Okay.
For sure.
So quick reminder, the audio book is called Soundtrack.
Yeah. It's only in audio.
Only in audio.
There is no physical book. Yeah.
And there is, so two-part question. One, why did you want to go this route? And then two, based going off of what Now said, because you said like you're from here, but there was a real New York energy you was bringing to that book. So talk about like how you incorporated that into it.
Yeah, I mean, I moved to New York when I was 20, and I lived there until I was 35.
Okay,
right. So New York, so much of my adult life was spent in New York City. I'm back home. I'm in D.C., but I live, thankfully. But I love New York, and I love what New York did for me and gave me. And it's like any other major city where it's impossible for you to not become a part of it if you want to survive.
Right.
Right. Like, you kind of got to get down, you know, or lay down. Right. And so I think being there in Brooklyn for all those years, I mean, I got there so young. And so to be there all those years and to be a part of that community, it's really, and at the time when my career started, I was there. So this is all about the kids in my neighborhood. This is about my train line. This is about sort of like what was happening, what I was seeing, so forth and so on. And like, that's why my first 5 books are all about New York, right? When I Was the Greatest is in my neighborhood. Boy in the Black Suit is in my neighborhood, right? As Brave as You, they start in Brooklyn, then they go down south. And so, because I was living there, and this is what felt most prescient at the time, right? Now, in terms of why this book is only audio, it wasn't written to be only audio. Publishers ain't see it. Right? I wrote it 10 years ago. I wrote it in 2015. And I turned it in, and it was crickets. And to be fair to them, I hear that, is that me? To be fair to them, I think if anybody been around me long enough, or if you've watched my career over the last 15 years, that part of my career, books were, I mean, it was like every, like books were coming out left and right. It was two a year, 3 a year sometimes. And so what was happening was I was producing all this stuff and I was giving them other books. So like I gave them Soundtrack, and right after Soundtrack, I gave them Ghost. And they're like, we're gonna put out right? We're gonna bump this one up, right? And then it was like, I gave them, you know, whatever came next, and they're like, oh, okay, we're gonna just put this one in a slot. And they kept bumping the soundtrack to the back. And eventually it was like, just tell me you don't want to publish the book, right? If you don't want to publish it, because I know it's fire. Yeah. I love that particular
Thanks.
Book. I'm like, yo, I know this is a special thing, but if they don't see it, they don't see it. So it sat in my drawer for 10 years. And then I got a call from my buddy Dan. Dan is who runs like audio at one of the biggest publishers. He's pretty much the Rick Rubin of like the audio world, right? Everybody knows him. He's won all the Emmys, or all the Grammys rather.
Right.
And he calls me. We've done work together in the past. And he was like, yo, we're trying to do something fresh, something new. You got anything? You got anything just laying around that either you've written, that you're working on, or have written that's just kind of sitting? And I was like, actually, I happen to have this book that'll be perfect for audio because it's about music and about these kids on the subway and about them forming a band and going on tour underground, which is what the story is about, by the way. We didn't talk about that. But that's the sort of basic premise, right? A bunch of sort of ragtag kids all over New York City, they meet and form a band, a jam band, and then they go on tour in the subway stops. Right, and build this sort of world for themselves, this career for themselves, and really they just build a family for each other. And so I give him the story, and he's like, all right, we're basically gonna dump all our resources into this thing. It's the first time that there's been an audio story, an audio experience that's fully casted, fully scored, sound effects. I mean, like, they've poured everything into this. So if you listen to it, it's like listening to a movie.
And I mean, and that's, again, you can feel that energy. You can feel like the care. But again, the thing that, and I'll come back to this because I think it's important for us adults to recognize it's okay, number one, to read young reader, young adult books, yeah. Right? And if you have a kid with you, to read that book with them, right? It's a way to connect. Because for me, like, as I'm sitting there, I'm taking lessons from the book about passion, right? About understanding what your passion is and fighting for it. And I'm just thinking of this kind of conversation that you can have as an adult, as a guardian, as a parent or whatever, with a kid in school, in home or whatever, about this whole idea of passion and family and what all of that means. That's what I got from it. Was that what you were intending? And I'm also curious for you now. What did you get from it when you were going through it?
For me, I was intending what I'm always intending in these books. How can we show black children as they are? I think there's so much talk about who we presume them to be, most of which are like thin slices of their identities, or what you hear about on the news, or what you see on TV, or what, right? And it's like, all right, so we have some stuff. But is that the totality of the black experience for children? And the truth is, it's like, nah, everybody who know black kids know that, like, they a blast, right? They a handful, right? But they ours. And that's enough for me to try to love on them in these stories. So how can I put together a story that feels honest and accurate, that doesn't sanitize their very much so complicated lives, you know what I mean? And then how can I create some sort of bond where they get to hold each other up? There are healthy adults in all of my stories as well, but I'm always about making sure that the healthy adults are also there to guide the young people, to teach them how to love themselves and their young folks in front of them, right? Like, build community with each other. Right? I got friends that I grew up with right down the street. We've been friends since we were 5. We all in our mid-40s, and these are still my friends. That means something to me. And to show that in the story is all I was really trying to do. We can save ourselves. We have saved ourselves, right? And that is what I'm always about.
Amen. Yeah, that's hard to follow up, I'm not gonna lie. Everything that Jason just said, and I feel like the huge thing about it for me, especially being a young artist myself, was the idea of just preserving culture, our culture specifically, and how important it is to have foundation and for young people to feed their dreams and their passions. You know, I was somebody who, when it came to acting, music, whatever it was, I'm very blessed to have two parents that really fueled that, and kind of seeing, when you guys do read the book, if you haven't read it already, that relationship that Sty has with his mother, and her being a musician as well, like, she's slamming music, art, everything that she knows on him 24/7, and that's what kind of fuels them to go out and start this band, despite kind of this rocky relationship that they have with her busting her ass trying to provide and also dealing with a real asshole guy that she's messing with. And I feel like the huge takeaway in that is, again, just the fueling of the passion, you know, and you get to see each character's own reason of why they're making music and why they fit together so well. And I feel like, again, that doesn't just go for, again, the theme of New York and really, you know, New York is a huge musical city. You can go to boroughs when it comes to underground music. It's just jazz, there's R&B, there's a pop scene. You go to certain clubs, like it's a different vibe, but that goes for anywhere. And especially when it comes to Black culture, it just weighs so heavy. And I think, again, that idea of really, you know, no matter what age it is, and, you know, it's very important to feed into that passion, especially, you know, for the youth and while we're young, because...
Yeah, I mean, that's it. And also, I want to say, because I'm home, because we don't ever talk about this. When I was growing up here, it was the same way. So, like, New York get credit for stuff, some of which they deserve. And if there's any old heads in the room, they know that some of which they don't. The Harlem Renaissance, you know, the Harlem Renaissance don't happen if DC not here. If they all don't start here. Mm-hmm. If they not all on U Street. Mm-hmm. And then they move to Harlem.
Yep.
We don't talk about it enough, right? We don't talk about U Street in the 90s when I was coming up and how crazy, how amazing it was if you were an artist and you wanted to find this passion and you wanted to go and see where the like-minded young artists were. You knew at any given time, on any given night between 9th and 16th Street, they were all there. Mm-hmm. All of us were there, right? Yeah. And I think for me, it was also, though the story takes, I was telling now backstage, like this is about my friends here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It takes place in New York City because I framed it there because it's easier. But these people that I'm writing about are the friends I grew up with here, who all grew up here in Glass Manor, right? Who grew up in Northeast. These are my friends here. And so I want to make sure, because I am a hometown boy, that y'all know that, like, we be giving them a lot of gas, but really, if you know your history about this particular city, you know where a lot of that stuff starts before they even get up to Harlem.
That's what's up. That's what's up. That's what's up. Give DC some props, y'all.
Yeah, man.
We got to clap it up for the DMV, y'all.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Howard University. And all.
So the other thing, and we're going to get to questions for you guys, but I love the range you provided these kids, right? And again, we always, you know, unfortunately, media likes to make us one-dimensional. Yeah. Right, it's one type of music, it's no musicianship, no range, young kids don't like anything old heads don't like anything new. But these kids, like my man Style was watching videos of Savion Glover, right? Like the range that they were showing in terms of the kind of music they listened to and would play, right? Again, show the complexity and the range and the breadth of what it is to be a young Black kid and what they're interested in.
Yeah. I think that was my childhood. Like I grew up in a house with it. So the beauty of growing up, of being a 70s and 80s baby is that we didn't have AirPods. Mm-hmm. and we didn't have cell phones. Because that meant that basically you had to listen to whatever your mama was listening to.
That's right.
Or your daddy or your older brother or whoever had the radio on, that's what we were all listening to, right? Yep. So in my house, it's like, yeah, when you 7, 8, 9 and you singing Nina Simone because that's what your mother's playing. Mm. Or you singing Tracy Chapman because that's what your daddy's playing, right? Or you singing my older brother, right? He listening to, you know, early Beanie Man. He's listening to and we just coming up on all this stuff. And then you got your local music.
Yeah.
Right? So you also have in DC, you have the go-go influence and all of that stuff going on, especially back then, and how amazing all of that was. Chuck lived down the street. When I was growing up, Chuck was living in like Oxon Hill Village or something.
Yeah.
Right? And so you would see these people around. And I think for me, that's really, it was that way because it was that way. It's written that way because it was that way for me. Yeah. But I also have a little brother who's a musician. And what I know about like these music kids, they listening to like everything.
Yeah.
Like if you know a kid that go to Duke Ellington and you talk to those kids, they're thinking about all sorts of strange things that you've never heard of. And they're listening, like whatever is making sound,
Yeah.
Right? They're curious about it. And so I wanted to honor, and also because of technology, I would even argue that there's even, so like we had top 40. When it comes to music, I think our generation was like super broad, right? Because mm-hmm. we had top 40, and top 40 was like the real top 40, where it was like, you about to listen to, you know, it's going to be Ace of Base and Madonna, and then you're going to hear like, you know, Salt and Pepper.
Right.
And that was a normal thing, and yeah. we knew every song, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the only place that we were that diverse, mm-hmm. honestly. Mm-hmm. I think this generation actually, because of the internet, I actually think that like they're really, I mean, these kids who are unafraid of anime.
Mm, yeah.
There ain't no way you telling somebody yeah. you were anime head when we were yeah. coming up.
No.
And then they like, and now it's cool. It's like, yo, I love
anime. I did, and that did not turn out good. So
yeah,
no.
It's like, whereas now they can say, yo, no, I love LeBron James, I love anime, I love Jordan sneakers, I wanna wear chrome hearts,
yeah.
but I also wanna dye my hair pink. These my gay friends. This my Asian homeboy. We skateboard sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm on a swim team. Yeah. Right? It's like it's the most interesting. It's different.
And I play the violin.
Right, exactly. Right. And that's a blessing.
Yeah.
Like these little black kids get to be free.
Yes.
And we don't really talk about it that way because the internet be tricking us. The truth is it's a whole lot of free black kids
Amen.
Just doing their thing.
Yeah.
Amen.
Wanna add some of that now?
Yeah, being and me, I'm a 2000s baby. I'm 25 years old. What was that reaction?
Hey, Jason over here with all these white beards and stuff like that. He's like 25 years old. Get out of here.
Look, we just happy to still have all. Look at
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know, right? I know.
We still got. You know what I mean?
Hey,
we hanging in there.
Sorry,
Oh, you're going to get here, Chance.
Your ancestor's story is proof that strength and dignity endure even when everything else is taken away. When it comes to honoring that legacy, your privacy should never be in question. At AfricanAncestry.com, your story and your information belong to you. We destroy every DNA sample and never sell or share your data with anyone. Discover where in Africa your story began accurately and safely with AfricanAncestry.com.
But yeah, again, with my personal connection to Stott, like that was one of my favorite things too that Jason added about his perspective is the fact that he was influenced by dance, by other forms of art. Because dancers are musicians. Mm-hmm. 100%. Dance, music is in everything. It's in every, it doesn't matter what you do. Mm-hmm. Every way of life, you know? That's what my parents always taught me. There's rhythm in the way that you go about cutting your grass, taking out the trash, you know? Like, literally. Like, everything, I like to see life as rhythm. There's rhythm to everything, you know? There's blues and everything. There's so much, you know, that you can take away from that. And dance is my first love. I was a dancer. I started around 7 years old, and I started training professionally probably around 8, 9 years old. And I trained in the city until I was about 18. And singing I also picked up at a young age as well, you know. And then as I got a little bit older to where I am now, I started really, really focusing on music. So being able to take that from Stott, like him watching tap dancers like Savion Glover and, you know, being somebody who studied tap, you know, it really shows you again that connection just in the influence, you know, that we all kind of hold no matter what it is that you do in life. And I felt like, you know, there's, just like Jason was saying, there is a whole new world with the internet and with this generation that I feel like a lot of people kind of don't notice, you know? Not everybody is tapped in, but there is a lot of young people that, you know, are tapped in. Even with, y'all might see, you know, when it comes to TikTok or whatever the sense is, like a lot of stuff that might be older is trending, you know? Certain songs are making revamps, and there's a lot of, my parents are like, you know, this song like came out like years ago, y'all don't know nothing about this, and
I was waiting for him to say last century, it's about to be a problem. If you had to say last century, it's gonna be a 19. Problem right now. Right.
I know better, trust me. But I think it's really cool to see, because even me in that sense, it's like, wow, this, you know, like seeing certain things get attention And I feel like sometimes there's a certain mindset with, not everybody, but sometimes with the older generation, as in, do young people care to go back and really study their history and preserve it and understand where, you know, this influence comes from? And I feel like there is a lot of movement where that is happening. You know, young people are going back. They're learning their roots. They're learning, you know, when, whether it's hip hop, trap music, like where this is actually rooted from, you know, and it's all connected, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like seeing that in pop culture and seeing people, you know, like even in sampling, people taking samples from classic songs and making it new, like I love seeing that, you know? And it's a beautiful thing. I feel like, yeah. And this book really talks about, again, the idea, like, you know, watching Stye and his friends, like, there's like one moment where Stye's breaking down how he sees like hip hop, like in Savion, like the way that he goes about his tapping and his rhythm. And I feel like that's just a really beautiful, you know, way to describe, you know?
And you know, I think, and I'll let you get it there, but I think the other thing is there's a continuum and there's a lineage always. Everything, there's lineage to everything. So like Savion has his own lineage, right? And Savion at the time, you weren't alive, which is strange. But when Savion was, for everybody else in the room, except for the five children, right? And you. Right? Y'all remember how when Savion came out, he was hip-hop's answer to Sammy and, well, to Gregory. Gregory was sort of like modern dance's version to Sammy. Yeah. And like, and so we got to watch the, like, there is lineage to all these things. In the same way y'all are sampling us, y'all don't even know that y'all are sampling our samples.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like
we've
already done the sampling.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think all of that is great. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that is what this is supposed to be, right? Mm-hmm. Be inspired by the people who did it before you and then make it yours. Mm-hmm. That is art. That is what we do. Yeah. Just honor it. Is all we ask.
Yeah. Right. I think the great thing about that, and this is, you know, so this will be my small soapbox moment for the day, is heritage. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we walk, this country will have us think that we don't have culture, we don't have heritage. And our heritage goes back centuries, y'all. Yeah. Right? The same boom bap that we listen to now is the same boom bap from the continent. Mm-hmm. Right? It is. It's a lineage and it's all connected and we feel it. Every time we hear go, go, mm-hmm. we feel it in our soul. Mm-hmm. We know exactly what it is. So, you know, it's, you know, the importance of books done in different ways to connect with people in different mediums, to give them different feelings and connections to these things. It allows us to remember that, one, we are all connected, but we also connected not only to each other, but to our ancestors. And we have a heritage that we can always lean on when someone wants to say something that's highly irrelevant. You know what I mean? So that was my thing. Wasn't as eloquent as Ramunda would put it. But what I want to do is I want to make some time for three questions, so I can get to four. I want to do four, but I want to open it up for anyone who has a question for these two incredible gentlemen here about the current work or anything prior. Yes, ma'am? Okay.
This son was dressed up as me.
Yeah, you have Black history. It is so crazy that you can see it all.
No way. He definitely looks just like me. He had on our own.
He got it on. He got it on. Come on.
All right.
Speaking to the youth, I want to know, like, as a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, like, just speaking to them, what inspired you to be an author? What would you say to them about writing and the importance of writing?
I think what I would say is what I always say. I think at the end of the day, this is the way that we get to control our stories, right? You know who you are. Right, and who that is will change 1 million times for the rest of your life.
Right.
But what you want to make sure of is that whatever version of yourself that you are, you have the actual control over expressing who that is. If not, everybody else gonna tell it for you. Mm-hmm. And everybody, I walk in the bank or I walk in the store and everybody think they know exactly what I'm on.
Amen.
Right? And they don't. And then they get mad at me, oh, you know, I write books for kids. Brother, I ain't coming here to rob you. I might give your son a high five. that it's on me and it's on us to make sure that we have some control over the narrative of who we are. The other thing, though, is that if you can't get it out your body, it will kill you. Gotta get it out. Life is hard. It's complicated. It will be hard. Gonna be hard. We'll get hard again. Doesn't mean it's not good. But it is a complicated experience to be a human being. You have to be able to get the inside stuff out somehow. Whether that through dance, through song, through exercise and running, through therapy, which I highly recommend. Whatever it needs to be. But for me, when I was younger, it was through writing. This was a way for me to get the things that I was dealing with down the street out onto the paper. And once it was outside of my body, I could feel better, right? Everything that makes you uncomfortable on the inside, if it makes you feel sick, is supposed to come out, right? And that's what writing has been. And then lastly, and I always tell people this, this is most important for anybody who has a child who's struggling with reading or who doesn't like to read. The one thing I want to make sure we all understand as adults, reading is not just about story. I think that we like to whittle it down to this idea that this is the way that you learn story. This is the way that you learn empathy, which also isn't always true. We all know a bunch of adults who have read all the books and who are not empathetic people, right? So it's not a pure science. What it is, though, is exercise for the mind.
Amen.
It don't matter what you read or listening to, which counts as reading. It's exercise for the mind. It teaches concentration. Little homie gonna need concentration. Mm-hmm. It's gonna teach him how to be persistent and follow through with something, because little homie gonna need that too, right? It's gonna teach him discipline, right? I'm sure he has enough of that. But it's gonna teach him self-discipline, right? And it's gonna teach, keep his imagination sharp, because everything in life will try to kill it. It's gonna teach us, keep his vocabulary broad, because the more language he has, the more likely he is to not be incarcerated. And most importantly, it's going to teach him how to listen to his own voice. You got to be able to hear it when it comes. That's what reading actually teaches you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
So I am new to you. So what would you recommend, besides your current book, would be a good book to start? Because I do believe that, like you said earlier, are not just for the young adults. Mm-hmm. And I learned that through Children with Blood and Bone. Mm-hmm. That was an excellent series. And so what would you recommend to be the first book there?
What would I recommend to be? So this is, the question is, this is someone who doesn't know my work. Welcome, by the way. I appreciate you for coming. And wants to know if she has to read something, what would be the first one of my works that they should read? A lot of these people are probably going to say Long Way Down or something like that. Even though these are a bunch of adults, and a boy in a black suit tends to be like the, like, okay, so I'll hear what I'm picking. I'm picking. So first of all, there's 25 of these books.
Okay.
So I think I'm going to go with The Boy in the Black Suit Long Way Down, you can read it in an hour.
Okay.
So that, and it's cool, that one. Or As Brave As You, a book called As Brave As You that I love. Those are probably my three, but it's my people that have got better opinions.
Wow, that's cute, so I don't
want to talk. Let's close the door real quick, please, guys. Thank you.
Let us swelter in peace.
All right. I'd also recommend, and I'm blanking on the name, the last book,
24 Seconds. Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So, hey, guys, can we step up a little bit so we're not in front of the magnetic
security gate? Security gate.
Because...
Yeah.
All right. And so, and the reason why I recommend that book...
Oh, 24 Seconds From Now is the book.
Yeah, 24 Seconds From Now. One, it's a great romance book, right? But again, I love characters. And that was a great book with incredible characters. I think you would definitely enjoy
that. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
How do you feel about so many of your books becoming
Oh, how do I feel about my books being put on the ban list?
Know the answer.
I don't know.
You know, it's funny, right? My books have been banned since the beginning, so my first book was put on the ban list. When I Was the Greatest was banned, right? Back in 2014. So I've been dealing with it for the entirety of my career. Look, it frustrates me and it makes me sad because I think I've given so much of my life, I've tried to give so much of my life for the betterment of young people. And so for anybody to say that I'm intentionally trying to harm them is just a catastrophic insult for a person like me who feels so deeply for the young people of our world, right? So first of all, I got some serious like anger about it all. But on the other side of it, it's like I'm black, bro. It's not about being empathetic or apathetic. Apathetic about negative things, right? It's not that. But it is that I was built a certain way. And so I move a certain way. And I have, and you know, one of the OGs told me years ago that she had just made 75 and she spent so much of her life freedom fighting and doing all the things and screaming and hollering and protesting and doing all the things. And I said, do you have any regrets? She said, only one. She said, I spent 50 years of my life hating people who didn't know I existed. Mm-hmm. When I could have put that energy into the people who I knew loved me. Mm-hmm. So how do I feel? I don't really think about it. I just love the people that I love. I love on these librarians who fight for me every day, these teachers who fight, these parents and superintendents and bookstores, right? It's like, I just don't got enough energy, especially at this age. I don't got the capacity for that. Who has the time? If you don't like it, don't read it.
Yeah.
Hey, straight like that.
That's everybody's choice.
It's everybody's
straight like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, everybody's choice.
Mm-hmm. We got time for one more?
So we got time for one more. She's got a Howard shirt on, man. All right. Come on.
So I'm also pretty new to your books as well. So I'm glad that you asked that question. But also being in the climate of the world that we're in where, you know, they're trying to diminish the black voice, diminish the historical culture, how do you as an author in your books portray that to young kids without kind of trying to not diminish, but how do you portray that to them to lift them up as opposed to trying to giving them the truth, but also being honest about the black experience in your books?
Yeah, so how do I give young people, like, because sort of so much of society has tried to diminish the black culture, black voices, and our legacy and histories and all the other things, how do I write stories about these young people and give them those things
without kind of making them feel bad about what their culture is?
Oh, okay. Without making them feel bad about sort of some of the things that have happened and got you historically. Here's the thing. Such a good question. I think. Okay, I'm trying to make this up. So I'm trying to pull it together.
It's
a good question. The first thing I'll say is this. Very rarely, and anyone who's read a lot of my books, you'll notice, even if you haven't noticed, that I very rarely say that my young people, the young people in these books are black. And the reason why is because I've always tried to figure out, over the course of my career, I've always tried to figure out how to create a black default so that I don't have to. Right? If we read a book and they don't have, say, the race of the character, most of us in here would default the character to white. And so my mission has always been, like, is there a way for me to code the language? Is there a way for me to write this in a way where I never actually, very rarely, do I say any kids what they look like, what their skin tones are, and yet everybody in here knows that these are black children, right? That is power, right? That means something for the kids who read this book to automatically know that it's theirs. That alone is a huge, huge thing. The second thing is, I write about mundanity, right? And what I mean is, you read Children of Blood and Bone, a masterpiece trilogy. That is not what I'm doing, right? What Tomi does is she creates a magic world rooted in the history and legacy of African culture, West African culture particularly. What I do is I try to take a slice of life to show the magic in our everyday lives. the very normal things we do. Because I think the issue sometimes is that because of our history and because of the way it's taught in school, kids think either my life is set out to be bad or magical. Either I'm going to have to pull off the miracle of all miracles, right? I'm going to have to be Booker T. Washington, or I'm going to have to be Harriet Tubman. Like, the Harriet Tubman story is miraculous, right? It's like, I'm going to have to be Harriet, or I'm going to have to be Emmett Till. And the truth is, you get to just be Jonathan from down the street, who watches anime and surfs, and wears funny clothes, and listens to rap music. That's all this is about, and that alone will get the job done. I believe it. I hope.
Y'all, this was a fantastic panel. Please give it up for Jason Reynolds, Now Bullock. You guys have been an incredible, incredible audience. We thank you all for being our first panel at Black Books Matter Festival. We appreciate you all. We're now going to transition. Jason is going to go out and sign, remember, 2 books max, y'all, okay? We appreciate you the support and following the rules, but my brother here is going to escort Jason out. Please follow the rules, y'all. Let's set a great pattern, standard for our kids, all right? Thank you all. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
What's going on, family? This is Derek Young
and Ramonda Young,
owners of both Mahogany Books and the Mahogany Books Podcast Network.
We really want to thank each and every one of you for listening to this episode. And if you enjoyed what you just heard, drop us a review and rate us on whatever platform you download podcasts on.
We truly appreciate each and every one of you for supporting us and making us your go-to for Black books. And we look forward to connecting with you all sometime in the future.
Thank you again, fam. And always remember, Black books matter.